Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Ben Rylan, and as always, we're ending the week by turning our gaze to the silver screen. And this week we're joined in the studio by the editor of Little White Lies magazine, David Jenkins. Welcome back, David.
Hey there.
Now, it is the first week of the year, and perhaps the calm before the storm as the awards season gets underway. Here in the UK, there aren't actually all that many films coming out this week, but David, which ones are you most looking forward to coming out for, say, the remainder of the month?
As you say, it's the big awards corridor, as it's known.
Massive corridor this year. It's probably a bit too big, isn't it?
A long, long corridor. And as of next week, you've pretty much got big awards contender after big awards contender. What I really like actually, is a film called Jackie by the director Pablo Larraine about Jackie Kennedy and the sort of story of how she reacted to the shooting of JFK.
Beautiful promotional campaign. And of course, Pablo Larraine just had Neruda out as well, another biopic. It's interesting, though, that it comes at a particularly maybe difficult time for a political movie, whether it's actually political in its content or not. It is going to be kind of bringing up topics that a lot of people internationally are perhaps just wary of quite a bit, that being American patriotism, political history. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think the film, it touches on those ideas, like, almost implicitly, I think, because of the nature of the subject and the people involved and the historical reality. But I think the film itself is more a sort of study of grief. And I think the idea that it explores most interestingly is this idea of politics as a performance. It's a film that has these many kind of layers to it, different layers of performance and different sort of layers within the film itself. And I think it looks at this period from a sort of sidelong view rather than being very kind of political and strident. It's not like Oliver Stone's JFK. I mean, it's the opposite to that. It's a more kind of impressionistic, emotional film.
Perhaps performance in politics, something we certainly have tired of indeed. Let's look at some of the films that we've got on the agenda for today's program, though. We'll begin things with A Monster Calls. Now, this is a fantastical film. It's an adaptation of Patrick Ness's young adult book that tells the story of a boy who seeks the help of an ancient monster to help him deal with his mother's terminal illness and bullying at school. Let's hear a clip.
I wish I had 100 years. 100 years I could give to you. I'm afraid.
Of course you are afraid. But you will make it through. For this is why you called me. Come on.
David, some people have expressed some uncertainty as to whom this film actually might be for. Some people saying it's perhaps a little too scary for children, but maybe there's not enough in there for adults as well. Although I've had a lot of people who I know who really love movies come back to me and say that they loved this film so much. And look, I have to say that when I think about my favourite films when I was a kid, they were all pretty dark and quite disturbing in retrospect. I mean, who can forget The Witches, you know, terrifying film with Angelica Houston turning into God knows what.
Absolutely. I mean, this is definitely, it's certainly not pandering to a younger audience. And there are definitely some very, let's call them adult themes in there. And it's quite sort of philosophical in its outlook. And there's some quite scary moments. But yeah, I mean, even in films like E.T., you have really heart-wrenching, scary moments that are going to send young children screaming for the doors, I think. But in a sense, they're the kind of family films that are built for the long haul. And I think A Monster Calls is one of those films that has a bit of, you know, it's a film that may not explode on its release and be fully embraced, especially as it's being released at this kind of awardsy time. But I think it's a film that will actually have a longer life than most films. It'll be something that people return to, kids will discover later on, and hopefully find messages in there that are meaningful for them.
Do you think perhaps we don't give children enough credit? You know, often it seems that films that we applaud for being great for children need to be just so obviously aimed at children and so happy and perhaps sometimes naive in the way that they're presented, that sometimes we forget that children can actually understand deeper themes if they're presented in a very clever and intelligent way.
Well, I guess it's that feel of, like, you know, you don't really know how these films are made and whether there are really kind of committees of people trying to second guess how people are going to react to certain things and scenes and sequences. But yeah, I mean, I do think that a film like this is caution is being thrown into the wind a bit, and there is an allowance for a certain, you know, maturity. There's an expectation of maturity and sensitivity on the part of the viewer to be able to sort of grapple with slightly bigger ideas. And, you know, there are films that sometimes feel a little bit too like they've been made in a lab to perfectly 50% appeal to like younger audiences and 50% appeal to adults, because, you know, there's a few kind of references to 80s musicians or comedians in there or something. But yeah, this one definitely has a sort of truthful, organic feel to it. I mean, one of the interesting things about it actually is that, you know, Felicity Jones she's in the headlines at the moment for being in 2016's biggest box office hit, which is Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. But actually, her performance in this as a kind of a mother who's suffering from a terminal illness and having to sort of explain it to her son without explaining it, basically trying to soften this huge blow. And it's this incredible performance, which she kind of builds up from nothing. And it's probably her best performance. She's been in the biggest box office hit and delivered her best performance in a matter of weeks.
Fantastic. I'm just pleased to find that there's no, you know, talking donkey or something voiced by some American comedian. So Monster Calls is out now.
There's a talking tree.
There's a talking tree.
There's a talking tree by Liam Neeson.
But that's fine. It's not one of those. It's not Rowan Atkinson or Eddie Murphy.
No, there is absolutely. I think that is one of the keys here. There is no comedy sidekicks.
I love that. It's so rare. It's incredibly rare. That's A Monster Calls. It's out now in the UK and the US, amongst other places as well, and will continue its release in other territories throughout the next 2 months. We'll turn to Chilean cinema now for Alejandro Jodorowsky's latest film, Endless Poetry. This is an autobiographical screenplay depicting his rather bohemian young adulthood, where we meet a cast of characters who would go on to become heroes of Latin American literature and culture. David, before we discuss the film itself, tell us a little bit about his previous work for those who aren't perhaps so familiar with him.
Well, Jodorowsky is probably best known for making these kind of, I think they're what's called acid westerns. So these very psychedelic, over-the-top films like El Topo and The Holy Mountain, which are kind of like, imagine Werner Herzog had taken tons and tons and tons of drugs and had no producers and was just allowed to do anything he wanted. And I mean, you're kind of halfway there. He's a real kind of psychedelic stylist, and, you know, he's known for this kind of, he has a very kind of grotesque vision. He's into like spiritualism, and he makes singular films. I mean, like, since making this film and his previous one, The Dance of Reality, which is almost like a kind of other piece with this one, he hadn't made a film in, like, I think it was like 20 years or something. So he's not someone who, in the sort of modern filmmaking industry, be making what you'd call bankable products, but he does make these kind of ripped from the heart singular artworks that, you know, again, like A Monster Calls, are going to be seen and cherished over a longer period of time.
It's such an interesting way to take charge at the topic, but he's planning 5 of these films.
I mean, yeah, he's currently 87 as well. If he's got, you know, 3 more in him, fair play to him, I guess. I mean, what I would say is that if there are 3 more of these films to come, that I think, so he did this film called The Dance of Reality, which is about his father, and then this one is about him in Santiago in the 1940s, his kind of embrace of poetry and culture and his realization of wanting to be an artist. It's a sort of low budget, impressionistic recreation of his youth. I mean, to get this sort of period feel, they do things like drape photocopied images over shop fronts, and you can very much see that it's kind of, you know, bits of paper with draped over buildings, and they have these sort of black clad ninjas who kind of skulk around the set, who pass props and things to the characters. So it has a kind of theatrical feel to it. But yeah, the style of these two films are very similar, and actually some of the content is quite similar as well. There are sort of characters who are in both films, and I mean, on their own, they're interesting, but like as a pair, the Endless Poetry does feel like a kind of same thing again as The Dance of Reality. Mm. I mean, I guess if you haven't seen The Dance of Reality, then
it perhaps might be hard to come into. You feel like you
Well, that's the thing, it's kind of catch-22. It might be hard to come into, but at the same time, you won't have experienced the style, the sort of phantasmagorical style before. So it's kind of either win-win or lose-lose, I guess.
That's Endless Poetry, out now in the UK and the Netherlands. Now let's end today's show with the upcoming film 20th Century Women. This takes place in California in the late 70s, where we meet a single mother played by Annette Bening, who enlists the help of a neighbour played by Elle Fanning and her lodger Greta Gerwig to help her look after her teenage son, who is on the brink of rebellion. Let's hear a clip.
Stop.
What?
Thinking that you know everything that's going on.
No, I don't. I just think that, you know, having your heart broken is a tremendous way to learn about the world.
This is the really hard part, and then it gets better, and then it gets hard again.
Do you think you're happy?
Seriously? Look, wondering if you're happy, it's a great shortcut to just being depressed.
David, this is one of those films that I am looking forward to, despite I think the trailer not being very good. Sometimes it feels like it's easy to make a really good trailer for a bad film, but then sometimes I look at films and think, I have this feeling the film is probably good despite a rather nauseating promotional campaign.
But do you know what you have to do? Just don't watch the trailer. Do what I do. Try and avoid everything. It's so much more pleasurable going into a film and not having any kind of experience of what it's going to be. I mean, you know, as best I can, I do try and avoid watching trailers. Obviously, it's a kind of professional necessity sometimes. Yeah. But I hadn't seen the trailer for this film, so maybe that was
why. You haven't seen it?
I haven't watched the trailer, but I've seen the film.
Okay, fine. Well, then you're one up on me. I'm so pleased to see Annette Bening back on the screen, though. She's such a wonderful presence.
She's great. I saw a thing recently about... So I don't know if you remember last year when Leonardo DiCaprio was doing his award campaign for the Revenant. And there was all these stories about how he'd, you know, he'd eaten bison liver and he'd slept inside the carcass of a horse and, you know, he'd lived wild for however long and all this kind of macho stuff. And, you know, Annette Bening, she just gives a great performance.
There's
none of that kind of hoo-ha. It's like...
So she doesn't climb inside a bison.
There's no bison climbing in the film, alas. But like... it's just this really unpretentious, sensitive, really deeply felt performance as this mother who's slightly confused about her, you know, she's bringing up a son on her own, and she's just kind of slightly confused about, he's kind of coming to a period in his life where he's, you know, learning about certain things and maybe looking to sort of escape the family nest. And I think she's trying to learn and he's trying to learn and she's trying to teach him. And there's not really a story to the film. It's director Mike Mills. His previous film was called Beginners, about the realization of his father being gay very late in life, and this one is about his mother. And it's just this sort of cine patchwork of remembered fragments of his life that he's kind of slotted together, and you just get this lovely kind of forward momentum, and it feels like a kind of, you're watching a kind of slice of reality rather than some contrived drama that's been sort of built. And, you know,
it has that semi-autobiographical tag attached to it, which can sometimes be a little bit troublesome, because sometimes it feels as though we can look at something that's pegged as semi-autobiographical and not really be sure how much of it has been inspired by reality and how much of it hasn't. I mean, that shouldn't really matter anyway, but when you attach that to a film, it does make you think about that, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think what the thing about this film is that if you approached it and didn't know, you maybe wouldn't guess, which is kind of interesting. But reading about what Mills has said about the film, he's talked about how it's small details that he wanted to get right, like an item of clothing or a painting on a wall or the texture of some wood or something that's more tactile and that creates a space of reality rather than actually people. Like, I don't think he got Annette Bening to study his mother and recreate, try and, you know, do a kind of Xerox recreation of her mannerisms. This is, you know, Annette Bening built her own character, and it's just sort of slotted into this kind of, you know, makeshift reality that has been built around her. And it's a film that really it's amusing without being hilariously funny, and it's kind of melancholy without being like tremendously sad, but it really kind of gets under your skin, it creeps up on you. It's one of those films where you really feel something and you're not entirely sure why, and I think that's a really nice feeling to have about a film.
We've got three female leads here as well, and despite it being 2016, it still feels as though sometimes when a film is headed up by women, the same rules as the 1950s apply. It must be a women's film. How do you think that will fare for this film? Is it going to transcend that sort of place on the cinematic calendar as being sort of like a daytime film for the ladies to go and see?
Oh, yeah. I mean, from seeing the film, I certainly wouldn't have pegged it as that. It feels more like a kind of, you know, I guess a Sofia Coppola film would be maybe the closest sort of comparison. I mean, it has got a sort of, it's got an indie feel to it. It's kind of interested in culture, literature, the music of the era. There's very much a kind of like artsy interest at the core of the film. I don't think it's a kind of female-driven soap opera or melodrama or anything like that.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, not at all. But yeah, it's weird, even though obviously everything indicates that this is like a film for women, even though it's by a man. I certainly didn't get that feeling. It has a
universal appeal.
It really does. I mean, there are sort of male characters. Billy Crudup's in it, and even though he's kind of the main character, the son, he's not a massive presence in the film, to be honest. The focus is on the women and Billy Crudup.
Well, there must be something about the film that made me want to go and see it despite that nauseating trailer. That's 20th Century Women. It comes out in the US on January the 20th and in the UK on February the 10th. Still a little bit of a wait. And that brings us to the end of today's program. Thanks to my guest, David Jenkins. You've been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. The show is produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time on Monday. We'll be dialing up New York to find out which art shows we should be taking note of. But for now, goodbye. Thanks for listening.